right, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, those who are breathing deeply and are sighing a huge sigh of relief. Welcome to the Falcoholics Postgame Podcast. I'm your host, Corey Woodruff, and I am exhausted. That was one of those games. You jerks wanted 2016 back, and here it is. I'm joined, of course, by no stranger to any of you, the Falcoholics, Alan Sturck, podcasting maestro and wonderful writer and analyst. Alan, thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me. Very excited. Did not expect, I wouldn't say a shootout, but a little bit more of a high-score game, because usually when we see these NFC South games, especially last year, there are more low-scoring than we would imagine. You look at both games against Carolina, both games against New Orleans last year, none of them really near the 30-point range, and Falcons scored 31, and they could have easily scored more.
Yeah, I mean, this was a really encouraging day. It's what I was kind of sort of expecting, because I thought that after that Eagles game that we really weren't getting the Sarkisian experience. I think that was one of the difficult things that you kind of had to watch, was in that Eagles game, that's just a great defense that does not do anything to help Atlanta with the way that they run their coverages. And I think when you look at what Atlanta does well against, you know, they typically do well, again, these kind of environments. You know, I kind of felt like today it would be a better opportunity for Sarkisian to show more of what he had been working on. And if you look at the way this receiving and rushing line has gone, I mean, there were 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 different people caught passes. Tevin Coleman and Ito Smith kind of shouldered the backfield. Matt Ryan actually was the third leading rusher of the day. 4 carries for 18 yards and 2 touchdowns. This was a well-balanced offense, and I think that is a big statement for this organization after so much worry about Sarkisian. Steve had a day, and this is not an easy defense to do this to. Obviously, you remember that big game from 2016 where Julio went off for 300 yards. But today, you know, they only had 272 in the air, but they got 8 people involved. And I think that is a major testament to what this offense was not good at last year, which was spreading the ball around and getting different people involved. And I think when you look at the story of this game, if we're going offensively, you look at the way that they've distributed and the way that they were varied. 170 on the ground, 272 in the air. They got, you know, 2 touchdowns in receiving, 2 touchdowns in rushing. This was the balance that we have been needing. And when you get into this stretch of the schedule without Deion Jones, that's what it's going to take for Atlanta to win games.
Absolutely. And huge kudos to the offensive line, because Carolina's pass rush really got after against Dallas. And I know Dallas is a little beat up, but they still have some big names like the likes of Zach Martin and Tyron Smith. And well, Collins pretty solid. But they totally overwhelmed Dallas as a line. Just the fact that the Falcons held up with like Schrader bounced back nicely. Fusco looks like a big upgrade at right guard. A lot of those big runs, he was on the receiving end of them, just clearing out those lanes, those cutback lanes that the Falcons love to take advantage of. And especially given that Carolina, you have Addison, Peppers, and inside with Short, Poe, and Butler. Just they're really deep there. And I was also surprised at how effective Ryan was when he got blitzed, because there were some times last year Ryan didn't recognize blitz as well. And today, whether it was they were rushed from the strong side or the weak side, Ryan got the ball out there quick and got the ball to his playmakers. And I thought the usage of Calvin really was a big, big moment for the Falcons, because after not just – he didn't get a catch last week, and it's the fact that he was so involved, and a lot of what they used him on were just these shallow crosses or crossing routes, and that's where you want him. You want him to eat underneath, and he was capitalizing on it. I think that's a big reason why the Falcons put together some of those big drives.
Yeah, and 3 cheers for Wes Schweitzer. He came in, Andy Levitre left before half with an elbow injury, and Wes came in and held his own against a really good interior defensive line. That's major, because if Levitre misses any time, especially next week against New Orleans, they're going to need a big game from Wes. And today, I think he showed that whatever he's been doing in the offseason, it's working, you know, over on that left side. So maybe it was just a matter of flipping him over the center all along for him to be more of what he's comfortable with. Because he did a really nice job today instead of Levitre.
Yeah, although I can't ignore that hold, because that hold was just so blatant on Kuechly. I don't know if you remember. He just yanked Kuechly down. And I understand. By the way, Kuechly was making some plays in the first half, but once I got a hold of him, he was completely negated. But there was just that one hold I just couldn't forget. I was like, oh, Schweitzer. Anyway, it's so blatant. But, yeah, between him, Matthews had a really good game as well. Just this offensive line, they go through these moments where it's like they're really compact. They got the job done. Then they face other top-tier defensive lines, and they just look completely overwhelmed. So they're obviously a top-10 caliber unit. Some might even say top five, but it's just the inconsistency of against upper echelon defensive lines is where I kind of question them. But other than that, they usually get the job done. And just the way they were using those outside runs or just the counters or find those cutback lanes, they just did a phenomenal job against Carolina.
And this was also a big day for Austin Hooper. You look at what Hooper was able to do, had 5 catches for 59 yards and a touchdown. I mean, this was a, I don't want to say it was a coming out party for him, but I think this was just a really nice opportunity where we can see some of that growth that he had been putting in the offseason. Because he was a definite factor today. I mean, he tied the team in targets with Julio. You don't really remember him being this capable in the past. He was always a solid tight end, but I think we're finally beginning to see some of that growth set in, and that's going to be huge. Logan Paulson had a catch for 10 yards. Obviously we're all wondering what's going to go on with tight end. Nothing for Eric Saubert today, which is fine. It seems like Paulson's going to hold down that tight end 2 spot for now, but really good growth for Hooper today against a team that has notoriously been well at covering tight ends.
So I want to clarify, they had the same amount of receptions, not targets. Jones actually had 9 targets.
Indeed.
Just want to clarify for listeners, because just get someone gets on your case. But Hooper, I think his coming out part was that Chicago game last year, just because there were just two crazy freak plays. And I think Hooper, what he does after catch is always kind of maybe more intrigued by him. Those leaps he has after catch are just so bizarre looking, but he's very athletic. And I've always been the proponent of wanting to see him utilized in the red zone. Just didn't see that much last year. And I want to watch that play again. From what I remember, he ran like a corner route, but I just like the way he ran it and the fact that he had the separation. And you just have such a big body down there, and he can make contested catches. So I hope he's more of a factor going forward down there. Him and Sanu should definitely be using him. Although, look what really did. How about that route to score the first touchdown ever? That was beautiful.
Yeah, it was. And I think this was just a big day for people quit to not take a game and decide a season over it, because Philadelphia is a bad matchup for Atlanta. They are always going to be, as long as Schwartz is there, as long as that personnel is there. Everything that they do is really good at topping what Atlanta tries to do, even though last week they still came within a couple of plays of winning it. Today, Philly goes on the road to Tampa Bay and gets pretty crushed by the Fitzmagic. So this is a week-to-week league. You cannot expect 1 week of your season to just dictate everything that your team is going to do well and do poorly. Because, again, the defense did a really nice job last week, but then today, obviously, you have to account the injuries, and the defense was not as effective. And obviously, they let up a couple of plays at the end. We'll talk about it here in a little bit. But I feel like this is a good opportunity for everybody in Falcondom just to take a deep breath and begin to realize that you can't put too much into just one performance. And again, we can't put too much into this performance. We don't know if this offense is going to be able to do this every single week. But it's a really nice step that this is our most recent sample of what this team is capable of. So I think when you're trying to evaluate this early season especially, you got to be careful to put way too much sugar in one cup of tea. Because if you do, you're just going to end up ruining the pot. Like, you just don't want to take one game and just figure out like, oh, the offense is going to be bad again. We need to fire Sarkisian and the defense is going to have to carry us. Because today, the defense could only do so much up until just it became a battle of who had the best talent. And the offense obviously could have done a couple of things at the end to solve the game. But, they're continuing to get into their form. I was really pleased today with what we saw offensively. And I think it does give some validity to this idea that Sarkisian can do this job. I know that there's been a lot of worry about what happened in the red zone last week, and it wasn't unwarranted, and he deserved criticism for it. But at the same time, they went, 4-for-4 in the red zone today. I mean, there was no gaffe. And I know obviously there was an early field goal attempt that came long, but when they got down into the scoring zone, they were able to make these opportunities happen. And I think that is a gigantic leap from what they did last week.
Now, what did you think overall with Matt Ryan? Because there was a lot of blowback. People were talking about arm strength, velocity, kind of looked off. Looking at this game, other than the interception, which I thought was rushed. I just think he got too excited seeing Julio downfield, because they were using play action a lot, and they were really effective using play action. But I just think Ryan got too excited, which he has a tendency of doing, especially when him and Jones are finding a rhythm. But other than that, I thought Ryan just his decision-making, just the velocity on some of his throws, especially when he had to hit Calvin Ridley in some tight areas. He did play a really good game. And then just some of the scrambles were crazy. This had to be his first ever multi-touchdown rushing game, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think this was the first time he's ever had two in one game.
Yeah.
Like, this is a, and he obviously had the Elway play there at the end and bloodied his elbow up to be able to get that second one. But now he had a great day. And I think when you look at what Ryan, again, last week, he's never been particularly great in Philadelphia unless they're just playing an awful, awful Philadelphia team. Like in 2012, that was the only time, I believe, in his career that he's ever gotten a win on the road in Philly. He's obviously from Philadelphia. He may get nervous being in front of the home crowd, being playing for the team that he cheered for growing up. There's a lot of emotion there. And then when you look at the last couple of years, that Schwartz defense is really effective at limiting what Ryan typically does and what he's comfortable with. That is one of the defenses that really seemed to rattle him a bit. And last week, the brace gets loose. I still think he might have had a little bit of a tweak somewhere that we don't know about, that, you know, they didn't disclose, that might have been kind of hampering him a little bit. More of a soreness thing probably than anything. But no, I think today was a statement that Ryan's still Ryan. And if you had any sort of bizarre worry that he was going to like be that quarterback we saw last week every single, you know, game this year, that's unfounded. He's a great quarterback. He continues to be one of the best in the league. And I think today you saw what happens when he can just get into a rhythm. Because again, like all quarterbacks, you just got to get into a rhythm. You got to get your flows down. You got to get comfortable with the play calling. And again, you're right. The play action today was huge. And that's something that people were really criticizing Sark last year of him not utilizing. So to see him base a game plan today off of play action and a strong ground game, that's huge. And I think that if they can carry that into some of these early games, particularly when they're trying to withstand not having Deion on the defense, I think that's going to be big.
Last thing I want to touch on with the offense is, how about Ito Smith? I knew a little bit about him, watched a couple of clips of him. I was trying to understand what kind of player he was. Obviously, he's shifty, has good footwork and all that. But I think the thing that really stood out was just the second effort on some of his runs. Like, I knew he could break tackles, but just the desire to get at least 3-yard gains into 6 or 7-yard gains was really impressive. And he's someone that could play a role going forward. I know Freeman's going to be out 2-3 weeks, but still, if there's a way, just even get him on the active roster, just keep him there, because he's clearly effective, and I was really impressed by his vision as well. I know the fumble, ill-timed, a little fortunate to recover, but other than that, you have to be impressed by him.
Yeah, I mean, he averaged 5.1 yards a carry today on his 9, you know, that he had. I think that when you look at what they needed, they got what they needed, because, you know, obviously Tevin had the huge day, 107, averaging 6.7 a carry, just, you know, shredding up a Panthers defense that, again, like folks said, is usually good against the run. I remember they said on the broadcast, this is the first time that the Panthers have let up a 100-yard rusher since Thomas Rawls of December 2016. So, yeah, it's been some time. This is a really impressive performance by Tevin and by Ito. I mean, you know, together, they really gave it to Carolina in a way that they had not been given it before. And again, they limited Ezekiel Elliott last week. And you have to be happy with the way that this ground game looked today, because this is a good defense that is good against the run. We all kind of came into this game thinking, well, they're going to have to get the passing game going because Carolina is so stout when they're stopping the run. But today, the ground game said, no, you can rely on us. We're going to get this done. So I'm really pleased with how they performed. You know, Ito's going to have a really nice career, I think, if he can build on this, because, you know, obviously we all know that between Devonta, Tevin, and, you know, Ito, it'll be one of Devonta, or it'll probably be Tevin, that'll be gone in March unless they really are able to pull some cap salary magic and keep him around. But obviously in that situation, they would probably let go of Devonta after 2019 when some of that cap money goes away. But I think you have to be incredibly happy with the offense today. I know that they could have done a little bit better in certain situations. It wasn't perfect, but 31 points on Carolina's defense, you can't be upset about that. Like, this is still a really good defense. It helped having some injuries in the secondary for Carolina, but then again, Dante Jackson didn't go out till way late in the game. I think that's after Atlanta had put up their touchdowns. So I'm really confident in what this team can do going forward offensively. But I just think that the big thing now is that they need to look at what happened today and try to build on it, but also continue to adapt to what teams aren't doing and what they need to do to beat an individual opponent. Because today they strategized a game plan that was really effective for what Carolina was fielding on defense. But they can't do that maybe next week against New Orleans, where things are a little bit different. Okay. And I know New Orleans is a bit disappointing this year early on, but they're still going to have to do some different things to beat what's going on there. And maybe this is Knapp coming in and helping Greg Knapp, the new offensive coordinator junior, we'll call him. But I'm really pleased with the offense today. I think that they did a really nice job.
Imagine that was like an actual job label, offensive coordinator junior.
Yeah, it's like a Carl's Jr.
it was like an age limit on it. But it's interesting. North Turner in the booth now, 66 years old. You know, I could picture him and Greg Knapp having a lovely conversation. But
I thought, you know, they did a nice job today getting McCaffrey involved. And we should go ahead and talk about McCaffrey since we're talking about this defense. But the Falcons had no answer for McCaffrey today. The only thing that they didn't do is let a touchdown to him. But, you know, you look at his stat line. He had 102 yards on the ground. He averaged 7.3 a carry. I think this maybe is just McCaffrey finally living up to his draft potential. But I think this is also looking at this defense without Deion Jones and Keanu Neal.
Well, they were always going to allow McCaffrey his receptions because that's how the defense is. It's just a funnel defense where running backs are going to get their receptions. Sure. You want to negate that. You want to make sure you get those open field tackles. I thought Poole and Carl Allen has moments in terms of just wrapping up McCaffrey. McCaffrey got his, but I don't think he had a great impact on the game. I thought someone like Funchess or even Jairus Wright had slightly more of a bigger impact. But I think looking back at this game, what's most important is just the lack of pass rush. And I just didn't think Duke Riley instilled any confidence to anyone missing multiple tackles. Had a first play of game, had a wrong read that led to a big run by, I believe it was CJ Anderson. He just doesn't look confident out there. And I don't know where he seems to get a quality linebacker play for next month because nothing really suggests that he's very handle this role. But now it's all Devontae still looks reliable at least. Yeah, he's definitely one of the better players on defense at least.
Yeah, it's tough with Duke because, again, I think one of the big things today you could notice is that the communication was not there early. And that was really hurting Atlanta because I think with Duke, he's not just taking over what Deion is doing with the tackling and the coverage. He's having to lead the coordination efforts for that front seven. So I think when you look at that, you've got a guy who is just not acclimated at all to having that kind of a role. He was struggling in the preseason just manning his weak side spot. And he was getting a bit better at that when Deion especially was out there. But now that Deion Jones is going to be out for maybe even more than half the year, they've got a guy in that just cannot, I think, right now handle all those communication duties because that is in and of itself a big thing. You have to be able to be back there and call some of the coverages out and really help get your guys going. And I'm not saying he's going to be awful at it forever, but obviously it was a problem today. And that's not accounting the missed tackles and the busting coverage. And he didn't have a good day. He's fast. He's a guy that can use his speed to get some of these tackles and coverage. But at the same time, he didn't do that nearly enough. And I think when you look at what Atlanta has, I don't know if this is going to work out until Deion gets back. I really feel like Dan Quinn now is going to have to look at what happened today and realize that, and it's not Duke's fault. He's not really groomed to be able to come in and fill this kind of a job. I mean, obviously he was a linebacker in college and did well there, but this is just a different ballgame. I mean, this is just a different level and Duke just has not been prepared for this. So I think when you look at what Atlanta's going to have to do, I mean, maybe they give Foye Oluokun some more looks there. I don't know. I feel like Foye may be better able to handle some of the communication. He can put that Ivy League degree to work. And, because apparently he's a guy whose brain they have been really harping on. And if that would help, and again, Duke's is still a smart player. I mean, I really do think that he is like, you know, he's a bright guy and he can go in and make some of these plays. But I feel like the communication is going to have to improve because you can't replicate what Deion's doing with a lot of his ability to play because he's an elite player at the spot. But there is still that issue of communication that I think really did sink them in key moments today.
Yeah, it's that missed tackle on DJ Moore was really disappointing because just in that situation, you just have to wrap him up there. It's not much else you could say. But and then with the passer, I just think they're starting to get stretched out. When Shelby went out, you saw the lack of depth and just on the interior, you have Jarrett, who's obviously a stud. Sanat looks like just a run stuffer right now. We'll see if he could ever really polish himself as a pass rusher. But, you know, Crawford's kind of like this middling veteran. Yeah, he'll give you some flashes, but he's not someone that you can really rely upon. And I think Terrell McClain's looked really underwhelming first two games. And it's just not a lot of options at Capella SC. Like, I had a feeling losing both Claiborne and Poe were going to be big, was going to be a big problem, and it's looking like that so far. They're just not really generating much pressure up front, and you look at some of the offensive lines they got played coming up. And New Orleans is very good. Cincinnati looks to be improving. Pittsburgh's one of the best. It's just, it's got to be concerning. And I know a lot of the pressure falls on McKinley and Beasley, and McKinley is doing his part, Beasley not so much. But it's just, this was a game where you really wanted to see. Like, they got some decent pressure on Cam. There were times where he looked flustered, but it wasn't nearly as consistent as you would like, especially against a team filled with mostly second strings.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. I think the defensive line today was the biggest concern. Grady can't do it by himself. And I think one of the things that will help is that Deidre and Sinat will continue to get more reps and continue to get better. And I think can take over for McClain in that base and be able to kind of take those starting reps, because he's obviously got the ability, as we saw against Philly. You know, I think the pass rush is the biggest concern. I know it's difficult when you have a team that you're kind of planning for certain guys all week and what you're going to do against them, and then at the last second they switch around, and then Moten goes to right tackle, Chris Clark goes to left tackle. I still think that has some bit of a thing there. I think that the Panthers were smart to kind of hold what they were going to do till the last second, because, you know, when you have some time to get ready for what some of these guys can do, it kind of helps you in the practice process, because Beasley may have been trying to go kind of get his skills ready for Moten or for whoever they were having over at right tackle, Silatolu. And then now he's got to play Moten, who's a much better player. But then again, also, there should be some time for talent. And obviously, you know, you have to hope that Tack is better than Moten. And you have to hope that, you know, I think Beasley had Moten, and then you have to hope Tack is going to be better consistently than Chris Clark, who wasn't on a roster until Tuesday last week. So it's not an ideal day for them. I think they have to be very careful about letting this get stagnant. I have a lot of faith in this coaching staff that this pass rush will get better. The Beasley stuff is concerning because he does seem like he's a bit invisible during games, or he's getting close to certain things, and that he's not having a good start to this year so far. And I don't know. And again, I'm a Beasley fan, but I think that this first couple of games is not encouraging for him, but I think he definitely deserves a couple of weeks to kind of get his feet under him and get comfortable with it. But obviously, if this is how Beasley's going to be this year, it makes it tough to keep him past 2019, where he may go get a deal elsewhere. But I thought Tack did actually a pretty good job. I know Aaron Freeman, who's a friend of ours, didn't exactly think so, but I actually do think Tack got some good pressures. And even if Cam is dancing around in the pocket, it doesn't mean that Tack isn't doing a good job to go back there and get the play done. Like, that's where most sacks come from, is when a quarterback lingers a bit. Like, you can't get every single one of your sacks just off an initial bust and hit. Like, sometimes you just have to, when the quarterback isn't doing exactly what they need to do, you just need to go clean it up. I think Tack did a nice job of that today. Obviously, the blitzing was a good for Cam. Brian Poole had a really nice sack, but right now the defensive tackle is the weakest part on the team, and that's not great when you have the injuries where Atlanta's had them with Deion and Keanu. There's nothing to do about Keanu right now, but I think with Deion, you still can maybe get him back for an important stretch of the season. So, you know, I thought the defense did a really, again, it was interesting. By half, they were giving them a lot of praise on the Fox broadcast for holding Carolina to 10 points. And really, it wasn't until, you know, they let up that big DJ Moore touchdown that, or who had the third touchdown for Carolina? Was it DJ Moore or
Torrey Smith or the Jarius Wright? A lot of miscast.
Yeah, exactly. It's just, these are a lot of random people that are.
Their support kiss is really not good. Like, I think Ian Thomas, the backup tight end, dropped the touchdown. Funch just dropped, which should have been a first overreach. Like, I thought Cam played really well. And shocking, because I thought he was concussed at one point, which I'm sure we'll talk about. But yeah, that support kiss really let him down, but he still pumped pretty good numbers. But they were chasing the game, so you kind of expect that. Like, they were going to get theirs against a team that pass rush is clearly not there yet, and they're playing a lot of zone.
Yeah, I agree. I think that, you know, today of all days, you did need to get as much pressure on Cam as you could. But then again, historically, has Atlanta been good at rushing the passer against Carolina? Because I feel like whatever Carolina does seems to always make it their pass rush.
Maybe I thought last year against the season finale, the one where they had to win the West, they got some really good pressure on Cam. But yeah, there's been other times where it hasn't been as much, because A, you just wanted to bring down, and I know recent years, they've been trying to get the ball out quicker. I know last year that was a big point of emphasis with McCaffrey. It didn't quite work out. But North now, they're doing a lot more seven-step drops. That's kind of North Turner's thing. So I think that's what made it kind of disappointing. But I don't know. Maybe Quinn's got the blitz. Who knows?
Yeah, it was a – I think it was an up-and-down day for the defense. Obviously, they made enough plays to be able to beat a good Carolina offense. I mean, Cam Newton was the MVP for a reason. He's a really good player. North Turner, I was curious how that marriage would work between he and Cam, because it feels like Cam is so different from what North usually likes out of a quarterback. But I think that they're cobbling together something that's effective. Obviously, Christian McCaffrey is coming into his own. Guys like Devin Funchess and Jarius Wright had good days. This is a good offense. And again, holding them to 24, I know that the last second, the DJ Moore touchdown in particular was really frustrating, because it felt like Atlanta really could have stopped that. And this did come down to the last second. But these division games are really tough. Like, you don't just – sometimes you beat them by a good margin, but sometimes they just look like today. And it feels like with Carolina, we at least get one game a year where it just seems to come down to the last second. And I think today the defense did enough. And again, we talked about it or in the top of the show, this was a very 2016-y performance with just maybe a bit of a better defense, just a hair better, because usually, you know, it would come down to the last second. The offense would have a really nice day. The defense would kind of have some stops here that has some really bad plays here. This is more of the team, I think, that we're used to seeing and not the one we kind of hoped they would evolve into, but the injuries kind of negate that. Like, you really can't do much about not having your arguably your two best players in on defense that aren't Desmond Trufant and Grady Jarrett. Like, there's just really nothing you can do much there to help it. But I think, you know, let's kind of do a forecast here for this defense. What do you think the odds are right now that they might be getting a bit nervous about Duke playing middle and that they would maybe go out and get somebody?
I think they're going to take their chance against Kamara next week, which I know is not ideal by any means, but I just don't know who's out there, because linebacker is such a tricky position, because you have to, you have clearly a very important role taking calls in and just organizing. I know Ricard Allen kind of plays a role as the organizer, but of course, middle linebackers have some responsibility with that. So it's hard to bring someone in for competition. You know, with Dan Quinn's mindset, it's just he's kind of, he prefers to keep things in house. He rarely likes to make moves during in season. So yeah, I don't think that's likely, but a couple more games like this, they might be forced into doing something.
There is one name that intrigues me, and I know he's a bit older, but Navarro Bowman's still out there. And honestly, he owes us, if we're going to be honest, because Bowman was the one that obviously had the pick six of the last game at Candlestick Park, where the Falcons drove the ball down. And obviously, we had to be another team to christen someone's history in one way, shape, or form. So I know that he's not exactly what you would want out of a quid linebacker. He's not the fastest player, but I think he could maybe come in and stabilize some of that run play and some of that communication. I don't know if he still wants to play, but I think if he does, Atlanta would be smart to at least give him a call and see what's going on.
Well, I thought you were going to bring up the NFC Championship game where I would say he got Tirani White before the pass was there. I don't think anyone really cares about that Candlestick Park game, because that season was over by early November, or even some would say mid-October, but I like to believe that. But yeah, I know he was last in Oakland, I believe, and mm-hmm. It's just, people said like he missed a lot of tackles. He was kind of getting blown up in the running game. Maybe his veteran presence would be helpful, but I just know Dan Quinn, he likes to keep things a lot in-house. So I think it's something drastic or another major injury it would have to happen. But I think if any position where they could make a move, it's safety, because definitely got to get into it. I think Casey's going to be suspended at least one game, and I don't think anyone should complain about it. It was a disgusting hit, and he was rightfully punished for it.
Yeah, that was a bad thing for him. I think that Casey, I think he gets way too – He's a missile player, and when you have those heat-seeking missile safeties, he doesn't have Keanu's experience or maybe quite his, you know, ability to know when to not make a certain play. That comes with experience. That comes with having more reps. But, I mean, Casey made a very drastic mistake today, and it led to Carolina getting a touchdown. There's no question about that. And, again, that could have energized Carolina to win that game. Like, when that happened, Atlanta goes down 10-3, and if the offense – looks like they did last week. I mean, the Falcons got 0-2. And I think that you have to look at that play as the moment where Carolina solidifies a potential win. And again, he cost the team by leaving the game and not being out there to help them when the game was salted. Because again, I think Casey could have helped when that Moore touchdown went up, and you would have had better safety coverage back there. It was a boneheaded decision. And again, he's going to have to pay for it out of his pocket. I'm curious if they suspend him. I wouldn't be surprised if they didn't, because I know there was a similar situation the week before where the player didn't get suspended. He just got hit in the pocket pretty hard. So I imagine the league may just realize he's a young player. Maybe they make an example out of him, but my guess is right now it'll be a heavy, heavy fine with no suspension. But again, if he is suspended, they're going to have to probably put Keith Tandy in, because I think that Jordan Richards, he made some okay plays at times, but he also at times made some really costly errors. So I think that he very much lives up to his status of being a reserve safety, and I think that he may have to lean on Tandy more next week, because Tandy knows Kamara after playing him against him last year in Tampa Bay. So I hope that Atlanta leans more on Tandy if KZ misses, because right now starting Richards back there doesn't seem like it's going to be a lasting effect.
The Bengals safety was, I forgot his name, but he got ejected for targeting Luck. I think that was the one. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know if he got suspended, though, but that's the one that comes to mind. But, yeah, I just thought it was just very irresponsible because Cam was clearly sliding in. And just in that situation, even if you get too aggressive and you go low, at least go to your shoulder. Like, all right, it's 15 yards, but it won't make you liable to getting ejected. Like, I've seen, not Neil, but maybe Ricardo. Like, I was talking to Ricardo Allen last week, and he was telling me this is some plays that's going to be personal foul or unnecessary roughness because that's the nature of the game. But to me, targeting like that, that's not nature of the game. That's just being careless. And Carolina had every right to ignite a brawl. That was pretty crazy. But, yeah, I wonder how they're going to adjust, because I do think he'll probably at least serve one game. And Richards, there was one play. I think he was trying to bring down McCaffrey. He went high and just looked so bad. He just looked very lost out there. And no surprise, because he wasn't active the first week. He just joined the team, less than 2 weeks now? So, yeah, it's going to be a bit of an adjustment period. But I thought Ricardo played well, broke a couple passes, almost had that one-handed interception, which would have been incredible.
Yeah, it would have. That would have been like a ESPN top 10 highlight. Atlanta already had the Julio catch that somehow got negated by a pick, because that's how the Falcons go. But yeah, they had a lot of really great moments today. And again, even if there are things you didn't like about the Falcons, they're not the Bills. Because if they were the Bills, one of their starting cornerbacks would retire at halftime. Did you see this?
I didn't. This is just a weird transition, because it's like the Bills and the Falcons. Where is this applied? But go on.
No, I just saw this, and I need to talk about it with another human. Lorenzo Alexander said in the post game for the Bills that Vontae Davis pulled himself out and retired at halftime. For Matthew Filburn.
That's amazing. That's like Pierre and Jerry retiring during training camp and the Hard Knocks getting it on there. Exactly. All right, not really, but that's the only example we come to mind. But that's crazy. But hey, if he doesn't want to play for a 2-14 team at best, don't blame him. He had a good career, Vontae Davis.
Yeah, he was a good corner. And I don't know, maybe he's like saying he's going to quote unquote retire just so he can go somewhere else and be on a winning team. But yeah, times at the end, they did some things today that were really good. They did some things today that they're going to have to work on. But this could have been a very different game after the KZ hit. Like, they go down to nervous. The offense wasn't looking good. They just weren't getting a lot of stops on defense. And then they just flipped the switch for about two quarters and just dominated. And the defense, I think they are going to need time to get ready to gel after Deion and Keanu were hurt, because I think Duke Riley could get better in the middle. I don't know. I mean, he's not – they had to try a lot of new things today, and KZ being hit didn't hurt. So this defense would have been, I think, a lot worse. I mean, but I think they made some stops, and it wasn't ideal to let up those 14 points and half or offense. That just happened. So I think when you look at today in a nutshell, you have to be pleased with what happened in week one. They got a division win. It helps that the Browns didn't beat New Orleans, because you're not going to get pissed off New Orleans team next week exactly. But New Orleans looks like they're not quite as effective as they were last year. Next week is a huge game, but you don't go 0-2. And I think avoiding 0-2 will tell you that if you can just avoid and two, you're not going to struggle as much. So I think that this was a really effective, you know, afternoon for Atlanta. And I think that they probably worries from this, just as some of the worries you had after week one on defense kind of began to show a bit towards the end.
I can't believe Ryan only look at his passing percentage here. Only 5 incompletions compared to last week. What was he, like 47% throwing? So that's an incredible transition. He took a lot of safer throws, but hey, that's what you want, especially against his own defense.
Exactly. They really, Ryan was never going to play like he did in the first week. Again, like, that was an anomaly. He may do that like once a season or once every two seasons, but he puts it behind him and he obviously gets a win. So I think today, you know, he's for our podcast, I'm going to give Matt Ryan the MVP on the offense, because I think he really turned it around today and was able to, you know, make something happen that he needed to in a big way. And I think a co-MVP has to be Steve Sarkisian. Sark called a really nice game. I know that there were some times he could, but for a guy who most people wanted fired after that week one game, I don't think he saved his job in a literal sense, but he may have saved it metaphorically for what Falcons Twitter was expecting.
Well, it's just 1 week. I don't think they don't make rash decisions. That's one thing. That's what good organizations do. Like, the Falcons are a very good organization. They don't make rash decisions. They don't lose their minds over one thing. Like Dan Quinn said actually multiple times in last week's post-game press conference, that eight months of work is not going to be judged by one performance. And I think that was proven today. They've clearly dedicated a lot of time to improving the red zone during the offseason, because I believe they finished 23rd in touchdown rate last year. So the fact that they knew it was a problem, and of course week one became an even bigger problem. But today, just the efficiency was very good, and they didn't have to rely on the running game as much when they got there. Like, all four of their touchdowns were either passing or Matt Ryan heroics. Or it was cool that QB sneak, by the way, because that was just a moment where just like, all right, just get in the end zone. So let's not be cute. Let's just keep this momentum going. Forget trying some kind of fade to Julio or some sort of wacky play action design. Let's just sneak it in, get up points, and move on. So that's the kind of ruthlessness I like. That's something that Kyle Shanahan showed a lot when he was on land. Just like, all right, there's times where, yeah, we could get fancy and use a couple of misdirection or some different sort of designs, but there's times we're just going to go up the middle and we're going to get to 7 points and that's it. So props to them. I just want to mention one thing in terms of moments. I was a little worried when Ryan slid awkwardly, hurt his knee, then Matt Schaub botched the snap.
Oh, yeah.
And then Ryan overthrew Julio. I was like, oh man, it's going to be one of those days. It's going to be like a 2017 slop fest. I don't know who's going to come out on top, made it five times, but I did not imagine 31 points and being so efficient in the red zone after that little sequence.
That was truly, like, if Falconing had like a picture in the dictionary, it's Matt Schaub fumbling a snap. Like, that is sincerely, like, if you're not going for the Super Bowl, like, that's Falconing in a pristine picture for all to see. But no, I think defensively, if you're looking for an MVP, I think you have to give it to Ricardo Allen. I mean, that pick was huge. Like, and again, he really had a nice day. He had to shoulder a lot of the responsibility in that secondary along with Trufant and Robert Alford. But I'll give Rico the MVP today, because, and again, the secondary, for what was left, I guess, that's kind of morbid, but for the guys that were remaining, I think they did a really nice job.
And I thought Alford played really well. He was around the ball a lot. I know he had one little ticky-tack PI, but other than that, I thought he was solid as usual. Carolina usually brings the best out of him, maybe because they just don't have receivers that could separate all that well. But since Alford has such great ball skills and he plays physical, it's just a good matchup for him, and he likes going against all those guys. And I know there was a touchdown on Torrey Smith where it was in his direction, but how can you defend that? Cam threw that ball, I don't know, 100 miles per hour, if you want to say. And there's times where Cam just threads the needle and just puts that velocity on it. It's almost uncoverable. So yeah. Other than that, I thought Alford was good. And Trufant this thing as well, though, just once again, just catch the ball. I don't know. There's times where how do you drop it? Because that play – for people listening, it really reminded me of Jimmy G's pick six against the Vikings, where the Vikings ran like a corner blitz, which the Falcons did here with Brian Poole, and Jimmy G panicked and just threw it into the direction of Mike Hughes, and Mike Hughes took it back. Receiver had no idea the ball was even going to him because he was still running his route. And it was the same situation. Trufant sees the ball and just doesn't catch it. And just like, And I think that's when Carolina scored. So just imagine, just there's always plays, especially in NFC South. The game will be decided by a couple of plays. And this game, although it shouldn't have been decided by a few plays because Atlanta was, I thought, the well-deserved winner, it was decided by a few plays at the end.
Yeah, that's Falcons-Panthers. That's how it's always going to be. I mean, unless we get a 300-yard day from Julio, I mean, these two teams have just always given each other just a fit and a half. And, you know, last year the Falcons beat them at home on Matt Bryant's field goal. Today Steve Sarkisian just came out of nowhere and called a great game. You never know what you're going to get in one of these. And obviously it's not like next week is going to get any better, because next week is Falcons-Saints at the Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta. Alan, what are you looking at from this New Orleans game coming up? Because obviously it's an important one for Atlanta, because if they can get it, they can get to 2-1, kind of stabilize after a bit of a tough start in week one. But if they lose it, they go 1-2. And, you know, it's a little harder, I think, to really keep those, like, if you're still hoping for a top seed or something in the playoffs, it gets a little harder.
I think they have to at least score 27 points, because both offenses are just fine right now. I think New Orleans is going to slow down. I know Ingram's still out, but Kamara, Thomas, and Ted Ginn always has his moments against the Falcons. So, and then that O-line as well. So it's probably going to be another high-scoring game. I know usually Falcons-Saints games, ironically, aren't really high-scoring, but it just not much suggests that either these teams are going to stop each other, because you saw what happened week one with New Orleans defense, pass rush, not really there even with Cam Jordan. Just their secondary was completely falling apart. It was a lot of one-on-one matchups, and with Julio, Sanu, and Ridley, and Hooper, I think they should exploit them. But on the other side of the ball, you could breeze time. It's going to be a long day. So it's going to be one of those crazy NFC South games, maybe high 30s. But
yeah, I think that's probably on point. The biggest thing next week is that the Saints seem a bit more – I know you've got Drew Brees back there, but they seem like right now they're running their entire offense through Michael Thomas and Alvin Kamara. That's not a bad place to be in if you're an NFL team. You need to score points, because those guys are obviously very good. But I think Atlanta this week, if they can key in on slowing down Thomas with Trufant, and or at least Alford, and then getting Kamara at least somewhat slowed down by this, you know, this middle of the defense, and maybe using some better coverages on him, I think that it could be a decent game for the Falcons. Because again, what the Saints have not done this year is they haven't really put together anything overtly convincing for a win. Obviously, today they scraped by against Cleveland. We really don't know how good this Cleveland Browns team might actually kind of sort of be in terms of them not being an 0-16 dumpster fest. Maybe they're more of a 7-9 blah, but like, if you're New Orleans, this has not been the start of the season you've wanted. You were expecting to blow this Browns team back to Cleveland with Josh Gordon out, especially. They lost to the Fitzmagic Bucks. We don't know exactly. Obviously, them beating the Eagles today proves that there's something working in Tampa Bay, at least right now. But, you know, I think this is a good opportunity for Atlanta, because they're coming off a really good win against Carolina. If this defense can be a better version of what we saw today, and its offense can be a better version of what we saw today, I think Atlanta can do this. I really think that New Orleans right now is still trying to figure some things out, with this offense being a bit less versatile and not having Ingram back there to kind of help spell a run game. So I feel confident right now. I'd like to see, obviously, KZ play, because that would make life a bit easier. If he's suspended and we have to run with the safety tandem again, it's going to be hard. Maybe Tandy could help there. But, you know, I think the big thing next week is just I feel more confident. New Orleans defense looks a bit lesser than they were last year. Now, I got to knock on wood and hope that I'm not jinxing it, but they seem like they're a bit of a lesser unit. But I just want to see this Falcons defense do enough next week, because I think if they do, Atlanta can go 0-2 or 2-0 in this first, you know, run of division games and actually put up some nice stuff. But we'll see how it goes. I mean, Falcons Saints again, it's a weird, weird game. It always goes down to the last second. I wish I could promise you something easier for next week after this week, but hey, it's Falcons football. You got what you signed up for. Alan, any parting thoughts before we send these people on their way?
No, next week it's going to be bananas as usual. NFC South doesn't get much better than that. Best division football. Although I do like me some NFC North. I know I got some criticism for saying NFC North is better with after the Khalil Mack trade, but I will still say that the NFC South is a lot more entertaining, and based on the Lions' performance in week one, it looks like that. And, of course, the Bucks, Dirk Cutter, Mike Smith holding it down with Fitzmagic. Got to give them up there. But, no, overall, though, I tweeted this out about a half hour ago that it's very hard to look good against the Panthers, even when it's usually like an ugly win. And And I thought for the most part they looked good offensively. Of course, defensively, they're going to have their lumps, and they probably could have capitalized on some more opportunities, especially pass rush not getting going. But just the fact that Matt Ryan looked back to his old self, offensive line was fantastic, and the running game really took it to Carolina. I think these are all very encouraging signs. And they weren't over-relying on Julio. Julio only had 9 targets, and usually when Julio's around the 9 to 12 target range, they usually win. So very, very positive signs. And I just think people really want to see the offense finally click, because they just have too much talent to keep underachieving, and they should be scoring between 24 to 31 points a game going forward.
Yeah, it was a tough week, and the nightmare seems to be over, at least for now. But hey, it's Falcons football. A new win can pop up any day. Alan, thanks for coming on our show, man. Let everybody know where they can find you and what you're working on.
Find me at Alan_Sterk. That's AllEN_Sterk. As usual, I have my Monday morning review piece up, and I'll have the GIF reviews going on Wednesday. Working on something else new for the season involving GIF reviews. That'll probably be up Thursday, and then Friday's the usual preview. So I try to stay as busy as possible.
Yeah, and obviously, if you're looking for the nitty-gritty analysis you need to help expand your understanding of the game, always go to Alan, because he's got it for you. Understandable and smart is what I can say. And you can find me on Twitter at CoreyWoodruff47. You can find everything I'm doing up with the Falcoholic. Got things going all the time, so come check us out. Got a really good group of coverage this year, and follow us on Twitter at the Falcoholic if you somehow aren't already. And be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes and let us know what you think of the shows that we're doing, and leave us a review if you'd like. We'll be back next week with another edition of this post-game podcast. But for now, everybody, take a deep breath, enjoy the win, and we'll be getting into New Orleans before you know it. So thanks for listening right now.
Hello, I'm Spencer Hall from SB Nation, and I want to tell you about my new show, It Seems Smart. It Seems Smart is a show about people doing things that, for some reason or another, seem smart at the time. Those things might include doing a little cocaine and driving a bike up a mountain. Or, I don't know, maybe racing 100 miles per hour across the country in the middle of the night with no one's permission. Or even stealing a bat from an umpire's room in a Major League Baseball park. Check it out, and if you like it, tell a friend. I'm Spencer Hall. Don't do anything smart.